Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, there's nothing that warms me up on a cold winter day like this than thinking about carnivorous plants and here along the Gulf Coast. And David put me in mind of this. You know, we're one of the great centers of carnivorous plants in the world. And we have we're the great center of the pitcher plants. The world's great center of pitcher plants is here in Alabama. And we have so many species. We have one that is named for Alabama, that is one of the more famous pitcher plants. Sarracenia is the name for pitcher plants, and Alabamensis is the name they give to this group of pitcher plants. There are two within that Alabamensis group. One is the canebrake pitcher plant, grows up in Autauga in Chilton County. I've seen it there. It's a very interesting pitcher plant, very big, very large, very distinctive. It has a very close relative that grows only in a few places here along the Gulf Coast, almost entirely in Alabama. Most of the populations are in Alabama. It's called Sarracenia warii, Wary's pitcher plant. Sarracenia alabamensis, the Sarracenia from Alabama, that is the variety named for Dr. Wary. Dr. Warii, and it's a beautiful little pitcher plant. You see it a lot at Splinter Hill Bog. It's a beautiful thing. It is now very rare anywhere, but with burning, it really comes back in a lot of places. We should talk about fire. It'd be a nice warm thing to talk about on a cold day, and fire and its importance to these landscapes in the South. Fire is what makes us a diverse place. One of the reasons we have so many things like pitcher plants and so many great pitcher plant bogs and orchids and lilies and asters and so many other plants is because of this thing called fire. Mobile County, I don't know if you know this, Mobile County in east of the Mississippi has more species of grasses than any other county in eastern North America. Mobile County. Why is that? I mean, you could go to almost any little pitcher plant bog, any sizable pitcher plant bog, a good hillside bog, a good hill of longleaf in Mobile County and Baldwin County, if we have any left before it's all over with, and you'll find more grass species there than you'll find in the Flint Hills of Kansas. We underestimate what a rich place we live in. We try not to think about it sometimes, I guess because, gosh, we might have to be responsible for it. We might have to take some responsibility for it, for protecting it. But, you know, what we do in Mobile County, what we do in Baldwin County, what we do in Washington County, Clark County, and Monroe County, and Escambia County, Alabama, and Escambia County, Florida, and Wayne County, and Greene County, in Mississippi, what happens in those counties? A lot is what happens to a world of creatures, a world of things. It can make a big difference in whether those creatures survive, and that's something we have to think about. And man, they are incredible things in the world of things. They are some of the most incredible. The great carnivorous plants of the Gulf Coast, if we paid attention to saving those species, we would save a whole lot of other things that go with us. The great carnivorous plants of the Gulf Coast. Give me a call if you're interested in talking more about it. David B. called and asked about that. David, I can't find, I think I'm just thinking about all the papers that Fred and Roberta Case have done on pitcher plants, that they've done a lot of papers. Look for their research. They've written a lot about them. I guess they don't have a book on carnivorous plants. That was just, I remembered all the papers they've written. On the other hand, a guy named Schnell, S-C-H-N-E-L-L. Donald Schnell has written a lot about pitcher plants of the Gulf Coast, done a lot of good books. Don't always agree with him on the taxonomy and what how to look at species, but if you want to know what the species are, the flora of North America, the flora of North America has done a good job of capturing sort of where we are with what species is what, and it will help you to identify those species. The flora of North America, it's available online. Pretty detailed accounts of what's going on there. So I hope that helps. I hope that helps you. Hey, yeah, and so this is a good time to talk about seasons, isn't it? So we'll talk about that. Dan is asking me questions about what are the seasons here along the Gulf Coast? There's six of them. We're going to talk about it when we come back, but let's get to some of these callers real quick. Mike, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Bill. I was looking out at the kind of the winter garden. Everything's doing great, and you know, the typical little bit of everything: cabbage, collards, kale, you know, broccoli, mustards. And I know most of it'll be good tonight. But what are the ones that need to cover up? What are the actual sort of down to the nitty gritty? What are the ones that are going to maybe peter out in this cold?
Yeah, so these are plants in the ground or just plants in pots?
Oh, yeah. They're in the ground, been eating off of them. You know, they're big. They're, you know, they've been going for a while now. In the ground, yes.
Thank you for letting me answer this question because it's a very important one. What do you need to cover tonight? Let me say that the only thing I'm covering in my garden, and the only thing I would recommend that people cover in their gardens, at least in Mobile and Baldwin counties, are things like peppers. And I know this sounds crazy, but it makes perfect sense. There are a lot of peppers I have that I keep them from year to year, and I do it just by covering them. But I don't cover my broccoli. It's not cold enough to cover broccoli. It's certainly not cold enough to cover kale. It's not cold enough to cover collards. It's not cold enough to cover turnips if you live in Mobile and Baldwin counties. It's not cold enough to cover mustards. I don't think it's going to be too cold for virtually any of that. Parsley is going to be just fine. Cilantro is going to be great. Did I miss anything? What else you got,
Mark? No. How about the, there's some things out there flowering, like how about the nasturtiums and the marigolds?
Okay, well, thank you. So let's be absolutely clear. Nasturtiums, you got to cover them. Cover them. Okay. They need to be covered. Marigolds, yeah, they are very susceptible to this kind of cold. Amazingly, we're talking about marigolds in January because usually by December we've had a frost that knocks them back. But if you want to keep those marigolds going, I think there's a good chance that you can keep them going. Just cover them. So marigolds, nasturtiums, you do need to cover those. I wouldn't cover most of your vegetables. The only vegetable I'm covering right now is my peppers. And I'm covering them because I can keep them going from winter to winter. Not so much the annuum peppers, not the annual peppers, though it's possible. But these are my South American peppers. Some of the Chinense peppers and some of the Bacatum peppers, which we've talked about. The Ahi peppers, A-J-I peppers. Ahi peppers, I'm covering those. But nothing else in the way of vegetables right now. The nasturtiums, which you can call a vegetable. I eat them. And, yes, I brought my nasturtiums. I put them up on the porch, keep them a little warmer, and then I threw a blanket over them, hoping to trap some heat from the house. I put some others right against the house on the south side of my house because I got them in containers. Put them against the south side of the house as snug as I could and then put a blanket over those. And there's some growing in the ground, and we're just going to let them, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll survive, maybe they won't.
Well, that makes good? It a lot easier for me today then. I'll let her go. So then with the winter vegetables, at what temperature, like when we have this, you know, t-shirt weather to cold weather, what temperature then would you worry about covering up any of the sort of winter vegetable crops?
You've asked the right question at the right time. The only problem is I got to take a break. So let's hold on, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to try to answer that question because I know we're running out of time. And Ellen, if you'll hold on as soon as we get back from the break and answer that question, I'm going to get to your questions too. Hey, folks, you hear what we're talking about when we come back. At what temperature do these plants need to be covered? We're going to do that when we come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Mike has asked some really good questions, and I'm going to get right to them because I know Ellen's got some questions to follow. Hey, Mike, so here are the temperatures. And you remember I said temperature is a relative thing. It often depends on what has been the temperature preceding it. So sometimes if we've had a very warm spell, and then we suddenly get 28 degrees, a lot of plants are very susceptible because they haven't had a chance to get used to that cold. So it makes a little bit of difference. This year, I'm assuming that even though it's been warm, it's been cool enough that most of them aren't really pushing growth too much, and they're going to be okay at these temperatures. But here's what I would do this January. Here are the temperatures, given the fact that we've had a relatively somewhat stable cool period, if not a cold period, at least a cool period. I would say that I would not worry about kale or collards ever on the Gulf Coast. There have been some winters when we had days of temperatures back to back in the low 20s, multiple days. And I noticed that kale and collards struggled, but nothing killed them. I mean, it just, they're amazing. Kale and collards are one tough customer. In southwest Alabama, it is very rare that any temperatures get low enough to affect them. Broccoli, because broccoli is a flowering plant, and it's somewhat less hardy, I worry about broccoli when it gets down to around 27 and 28 degrees. Understand that temperatures at 29, 30, 31 degrees are actually beneficial for broccoli because it gets rid of the bugs, And it actually sweetens the broccoli. It actually improves the flavor. That's true for most vegetables. So we want them to be exposed to temperatures, those cool season vegetables, to temperatures around 30, 31, 32 degrees. But there's a window about 27, 28 degrees is the window when I start worrying about mustards, turnips, broccoli, cauliflower. That's the temperature at which those plants can be very vulnerable. Parsley, a lot of other things can usually take down to 24, 23. Lettuce is usually good down to around 25, 24, 23, and sometimes even lower. Collards and kale down to 20 at least, and maybe much more. Nasturtiums, they love it. They love it when the temperature drops to 33 degrees, but when it gets to 31 degrees, the nasturtiums say, we can't do this. So there it is. There it is.
And how about the if we have cabbages that are kind of got good heads on them, they're heading up pretty good. They're good for a good while.
Cabbages,
right?
Are pretty tough. And I would say, and anybody who's had more experience growing cabbage year in and year out than I have can pipe in. But I would say cabbages probably down to 22, 23, 24 degrees without any problems. Okay. So cabbages I wouldn't worry about.
Cool. Great. Well, you made the rest of my day easier then. Thank you.
Yeah. It's pretty easy. So Ellen, what are you thinking about this cold? I mean, what are you worried about?
Well, you answered my questions about covering things and when to cover them. So that's good. One thing I wanted to ask you was, how do you cook your mustard? How do you, what kind of way do you prepare your mustard greens?
Oh, Ellen, what a wonderful question. You knew that would go right to my heart to ask that question. So here's the mustard greens. So we love these giant red mustard. Are you growing the giant reds? Have you got those big red leafed mustards?
Yes, I have the red leaves, and I have the, I don't remember what the green ones I bought.
Yeah, yeah.
Pines. Remember when I was crying because my seedlings were leggy?
Right.
Well,
and they
it,
all did.
It, I mean, it all worked out beautifully. I did what you said and put them in the sun, and there.
Yeah.
I have a ton of mustards.
Yeah, so that's great. So here it is. You know, I love eating that mustard raw. I love that, eating that red mustard raw. It's beautiful. I think, you know, it's some people eating too much raw red mustard, it can be a little bit much for their stomachs, I will tell you. Nothing permanent. It's probably good for you, but it can, you know, you get a little bit of something going on there. But listen, the red mustards, if I love them cooked. And so here's what I do. Here's what I do with the mustard greens, particularly the red mustard. Strip the leaves off of the stems. So take the leaves off the stems, okay? See what I'm saying? Just strip them. And then take the stems and cut them up just like you'd cut celery up, okay? You got it?
Yes.
The mustard stems. Garlic, a little bit of pepper, just a little bit of pepper, and fresh, good pepper out of the gardens. I use my ahi peppers if I can do it. If I can't, I use that fresh pepper sauce from Cambodia. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a really good one. A guy from Cambodia has great pepper sauce. And you can do that with a little garlic, a little bit of oil in the bottom of the pan, and do this in the black skillet, okay? Big black skillet, little oil. Put the garlic in there. Let it get a little brown, just a little brown, along with that pepper. Then put the onions in, if you like a little onion with it. And then put the stems in from those mustard greens. Just put those stems in. Kind of get them a little bit toasty and a little bit coated in oil. Let them melt down just a little bit. And then put your leaves in and stir fry them until they're wilted down pretty good. And then, if you want to, you can eat them just almost as soon as they wilt down, just like a wilted salad, or you can let them cook just a little bit longer, let them wilt down a little more, however you want to do it. But it's very simple, very easy. You get that great mustard taste. I don't like cooking them so long so that you lose the, you don't want to lose the bite, because they've got just that little bit of bite that you want left in the cooked greens. So that's basically how I do it. And a lot of times I'll mix those mustard greens with other things. Like, you know, you really want to pick the kale up, give it just a little bit of mustard bite. I go ahead and cook the kale a little bit, and just in the end I put those mustard leaves in, let them add the flavor to it. It can be very good. That's how I do it.
Awesome. Well, at Christmas we made salads. We just went out and picked the mustard greens and got the leaves off, you know, cut them up a little bit with, and put goat cheese and
it's so good.
My balsamic vinaigrette, and it was delicious, and put some peppers in there and ate them raw. So I wanted to know how you cooked them, though.
That's great. And so that's really easy, and just that way you don't lose the flavor. You don't need to cook these mustard greens all day like we used to do the old mustard greens. I mean, give them let them have some of their flavor left.
Yeah, because they're delicious.
They're absolutely
When you start your seeds, you've mentioned warming mats. So tell me how that works.
Yeah. So there's a good question. So there are these things. There's the little electrical mats that you can buy, germination mats, they call them, or heating mats for plants. And they resemble like those heating pads that, you know, that you plug in, that you put on if you got sore muscles. And in one point I used a heating mat to do my plants with, and that's probably not a good idea for a lot of reasons. But these germination mats are kind of perfect, and you can get them. They're not that expensive. They're really amazingly not that expensive. Look for your best deal. Get one that's about 12 by, you know, well, get it big enough to put your seedlings on.
Mm-hmm.
And you just plug it in. You can get a thermostat with it if you like. And I think the thermostats help. I don't think they're absolutely necessary, but I think it helps to have a thermostat. It doesn't add much to the price. And then you just put your seedlings on it, and your germination rates are going to be so much faster for things, for almost everything this time of year. You don't need those heating mats in summer, But you do need them in winter to speed things up. And so they're very useful for starting your tomatoes, peppers, basil, all those eggplants in particular. All of those really helps because you want to get them started while it's still cool. And so the germination mats really help.
Okay.
Does that help?
Awesome. That's perfect. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Good to hear from you. Hey, Thurston, I'm listening. What's up?
Yes, sir. I got a two-part question. First of all, when is the best time to prune gardenias? Next part is dogwoods. A few years back, we were having big problems with dogwoods because they said it's because of acid rain from the paper mills. Well, the paper mills have been shut down for a couple of years now, so there should be no more acid rain. Want to get your opinion about planting dogwoods also. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, good, good. So here's the thing about dogwoods. You know, it's funny. It is so funny how, you know, hurricanes get blamed for weeds, right? Oh, you know, that weed came in on this hurricane. It's ridiculous. That weed didn't come in on that hurricane. It's been here all along. You just didn't notice it until you had a hurricane and whatever reason. And we tend to blame things like that. It's the buzzard syndrome, right? You don't know what's causing something, so you kind of take what you see at the time. You're driving down the road with your dad in the car. This is the buzzard syndrome. You're driving down, you're driving down those two lanes, some country road two lane, and you look up ahead of you, and there's a bunch of buzzards gathered around an armadillo or a possum. And you say to your dad, "Dad, why do them buzzards, man, they sure do kill a lot of armadillos." Hey, we're going to be back. It ain't the acid rain. That's not the problem with the dogwoods. We're going to be back. Thurston, I'm going to talk about that. But I can hear I got to take a break.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, let me come back and answer Thurston's questions about the dogwoods. Hey, listen, we sometimes have a hard time smelling our own stink. We're the ones who run over the armadillos on the roads, and we blame it on the buzzards when we're kids. We're adults now. We have to take responsibility for things. The paper mills were responsible for a lot of problems, no question, pollution issues in Mobile. But they got blamed for things that probably they shouldn't have gotten blamed for. But clearly, they had nothing to do with the dogwoods. Dogwoods are really, we lost dogwoods because of us, because of what we did. One of the things, we had more dogwoods in Mobile and Baldwin counties than we probably should have because of fire suppression. We created an environment in which diseases could take hold, and then we started importing diseases to Mobile in huge numbers by buying dogwoods from other places, by bringing plants in from other places, by planting dogwoods row to row to row to row. It was like, you know, it was like the only tree we were going to plant. And we created a perfect opportunity for diseases to take hold and take off. And in fact, they did. It had nothing to do with the paper mills, nothing to do with anything. It had to do with the fact that we planted too many dogwoods. That was probably the biggest issue. And that we were careless about doing that. We're about to do the same thing with crepe myrtles. We've essentially done the same thing with crepe myrtles. We're going to see more and more crepe myrtle diseases. We're now doing the same thing with live oaks. We're going to see more live oak diseases. I certainly hope this won't be the case, but we could see the kind of devastation with live oaks that we've seen with dogwoods. So it wasn't the industry, it was us. It was overplanting dogwoods. and allowing these diseases and encouraging diseases to come in, which we do because of our carelessness, our thoughtlessness. We're bringing in diseases that are going to wreck our citrus paradise that we have here. We're bringing in diseases now that are wrecking many of the great plants we once had, like Red Bay, because we're going to see emerald ash borers. We got all kind of things. We don't pay attention. We're the ones responsible for these, for the loss of these plants. And primarily overplanting is the biggest issue with dogwoods right now, particularly here along the Gulf Coast. We made a vector for diseases. We allowed diseases that probably wouldn't have become widespread to become widespread very quickly. And that's what happened to dogwoods. Something to think about. There it is. Hey, I got some calls about when should I start prepping my seeds for a summer garden. Let me reiterate, the time to do that for tomatoes and peppers, right now. I would start particularly long-season peppers like the ajis, AJIs, the South American peppers, and the group Bacatum. And probably bell peppers, too, peppers that are a little bit fragile, the annuum peppers that we need to get in as early as tomatoes, simply so they don't suffer from diseases and heat. I'd start all that. We need to get them started pretty soon. David has already got his. David Hubble's already got his up and growing really fast. I know Dan's got his seeded. I know a lot of other people have begun to seed them in. Germination mats, those heating mats that I talked about, they can help a lot. They can help a lot just to get the seeds up. They need that warm soil to get started more than they need sunlight. They need that warm soil. So start them inside in trays, in containers. Get them up to size. Get those true leaves on. Once you start seeing the green and they need a lot of sunlight, David Hubble says he's had great success putting a little extra light on them this year with some grow lights. And getting better results. If you don't have a lot of sunlight, the grow lights can certainly help. So there it is. Getting those seeds. It's time to get them up and started. I use grow lights a little bit. A lot of days it can be warm enough, particularly in February, that you can put them outside during the day, keep the soil warm with the heating mat if you need to. But if the daytime temperatures are in the upper 50s and 60s, give them some sunlight outside. They'll really appreciate that. They'll grow really fast. Yeah, it's about time to get started with a lot of those seeds. And it's something to think about. Something to think about. Tony is telling me he's actually got bell peppers growing out in the garden, and they're still there. He's going to cover them. So that he has those, and so that they're ready to go. Dan is asking me about seasons and zones. You know, there's a lot of, we borrow our ideas, and I go on this diatribe several times a year because it's very important to gardening. It's very important to understand that the seasons in Austria aren't the seasons in Mobile. And the seasons in northern Germany and in England aren't the seasons in Mobile any more than the seasons in the Arctic are the seasons at the equator. Different places have different seasons, and they're not four seasons. And it's very complex. In Australia, there are many places where the Aborigines talk about eight seasons. And I can tell you, as I'm reading through the literature, the language of the Choctaws, the language for seasons and times, as I'm beginning to study Muskegon languages, and in an effort to understand where we are, because I want to know how people thought about this place. So I'm looking at Creek words, and I'm looking at Alabama words, and I'm looking at Coosada words, and I'm looking at Choctaw words for things like seasons, and I've begun to understand that they had a concept of 6, 7, 8 seasons here along the Gulf Coast. For me, I see 6 seasons along the Gulf Coast. It's very distinctive, particularly here, and I think that applies probably up towards up into Monroe County, at least the southern part of Monroe County and Choctaw County, well up into Mississippi. I think there are six very distinctive seasons. I think as you move farther north, it kind of evolves into five seasons, is my best understanding of things. But six very distinctive seasons here, each one lasting about 2 months. And just to keep it simple enough, I kind of put that, I say the transitions occur about February 15 and 20. Between February 15th and February 20th, we have a transition to something, from something like winter to something like spring. And we have a very long 2 month spring. It lasts from February 15th, February 20th, into April 15th and April 20th. And then we get into American summer, which is very warm days, 80 degree days. Still, the nights are very cool. It's like summer in Michigan. It's like summer in Ohio. It's like summer in Missouri. It's Huck Finn summer. It's the classic mid-American summer that we have between April 15th and, say, June 15th, maybe April 20th to June 20th, somewhere right in there. There it is. And then on June 15th, June 20th, we transition to Gulf summer, a very distinctive summer where there's not much difference in day and night temperatures. Very important for growing plants. It's almost too hot at night for a lot of plants. It's too hot at night for your tomatoes. It rains virtually every day. Your tomatoes quit producing. That's why we start our tomatoes so early, is because when American summer gets here, it's very hard to get good tomatoes during that period from, say, June 15th, June 20th, up to August 15th and August 20th. And then we have a transition to what I call hurricane summer, where the nights gradually get cooler. Things begin blooming again. You get a whole bunch of blooms. It's a real important time as the night, because the nights get longer, the days get shorter, plants respond to that. It's a real important time for sowing plants, for germinating plants, hurricane summer between August 15th and, say, September and October 15th. October 15th, hurricane summer is over. We're into fall, a great fall here along the Gulf Coast. And then about December 15th, we can say we're in full-fledged winter again. Winter has taken hold. So there it is, our distinctive seasons. You know, there's another thing that we talk about, which has to do with zones for plants surviving, and that can be very confusing. There's a system they use nationally where they rank areas by zones of hardiness, and so you'll see things like, oh, well, this plant is hardy to zone 6A or to zone 6, which zone 6 is basically up around Kentucky. Kentucky's basically that line of zone 6, A and B. That's sort of where I see the heart of zone 6. Kentucky into Ohio, and Ohio transitions to zone 5, zone 4 up in Michigan, zone 3, much colder as we get to those lower numbers. We live in an area that is on the border of zone 8 and zone 9, and there's a lot of debate about that. But one of the interesting things is that zone 8 and zone 9 in the southeast is very different than zone 8 and zone 9 in California. So when you see these little plant guides that say, oh, this plant's is hardy in zone 8 or zone 9, that doesn't mean anything. That could mean a whole lot of things. And really, all that hardiness zone tells you is it describes its ability to survive the winter. It has nothing about its ability to survive the summer. So a lot of plants that may survive the winter in zone 8 and zone 9 don't survive the summer here. The short of it is, those hardiness zones don't tell us a lot. They don't tell us a lot. There it is. Hardiness zones, not a lot of information there that you can use reliably. But the seasons, we have six of them here along the Gulf Coast, and it really pays to pay attention to them, to plant accordingly, to get your plants in the ground soon enough so that they take advantage of our distinctive seasons. And remember that Gulf summer is a beautiful season. It is the season of okra. It's the season of eggplants. It's the season of hibiscus. It's the season of all of those plants, bananas, all of those plants that love hot nights. But it is not the season of things like tomatoes. Tomatoes do not like that American summer. That's why we get them started early, early, folks. Give me a call if you need more answers. 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. And, you know, we got lots to talk about this morning. I want to wrap up here real quick, but we're going to come back to that. What do you need to do? Let's talk about this cold. Let's get it all down. Hey, Charlie, do we have any callers?
Bill, we have lines open for callers.
Okay, good. Well, that's all right. So we had a caller, kind of lost a caller early on, but listen, let's wrap up real quickly. This is a good time to do it. This is the kind of cold that's a good cold. I'm glad we're getting it. I'm glad we're getting it because if it had stayed much warm for much longer, we would have had things blooming out of season. They wouldn't have done very well. We would have had some problems. We would have had huge bug problems. I'm hopeful that we're going to get cold temperatures, good cold temperatures, at freezing or just a little below. Along the coastal counties, now I'm going to say this is certainly true for the coastal counties of Mississippi and Alabama and Northwest Florida. None of your cool season crops need to be covered at these temperatures. The things I'm covering are things like peppers and tomatoes that have managed to survive this long. And that's okay. That's good. That's a good thing to do. Nasturtiums, marigolds, if you want to keep them going. Those are the kinds of things that need to be covered. Here's what doesn't need to be covered. Any of the cool season greens, lettuce, kale, collards, broccoli, parsley, cilantro, what am I forgetting? Fava beans, peas. There's a bunch of those out there. Certainly cauliflower, to mustard, turnip greens, beets. Don't worry about it. This is the cold temperature, at least along the coastal counties. These are the kinds of cold temperatures that are good for those plants. They're going to do real well. This will actually make them taste better, and it will actually reduce the bug problems that we're beginning to have because it's stayed a little too warm. So those are good. Those are good things. That's good things to think about. Let's remember that as we're out there covering plants. So not everything needs to be covered just because it's cold. Now, the coming weekend, I want to prepare you. If it gets down to, listen, here it is. If it gets down to 26, 27 degrees this coming weekend, and I think it may, I think it could happen because of some things going on. I think that could happen. You might need to cover your broccoli. You might want to cover mustard greens. You might want to cover your turnips. You might want to cover your lettuce because they're not really good with temperatures down below about 26, 27 degrees. But your collards, a lot of other plants, they're gonna be just fine. So you don't need to worry about them, and you don't need to worry about them at all. Rusty, on the young citrus trees, I wouldn't even worry about citrus trees unless the temperature gets down to 28 degrees. Unless the temperature gets down to 28 degrees, at 28 degrees, young, freshly planted citrus trees, I might worry about a little bit. I might drape them. At 26 degrees, I really start worrying about young citrus trees. They really could use a covering at 26 degrees. So there it is. There's a way to begin thinking about these things. There's a way to make it work. And I hope that helps you. Listen, the other thing we need to wrap up is that even though it's chilly outside, if we're going to take advantage of our seasons, we have to start things in containers. So if you want lettuce or collards or broccoli or other things, if you want tomatoes, if you want peppers, those kinds of things, you need to go ahead and get them started in containers now, because you're going to need them to be ready for American summer, so that they're ready to go. Hey, Charlie, there's a little bit of an echo. You might turn that down. Yeah, and Johnny, I'm listening.
Hey, Bill.
Johnny, I'm listening. What's up? How are you?
About the cabbages. If you got those cabbages like that guy was talking about, they're headed up real good, and it's going to get cold enough to where you're going to get, you know, like in a 29-degree or a 28-degree frost.
Yeah.
If you want them, those heads to stay pretty on top, you may want to cover them up with something. I don't know what, but I usually don't worry about mine, but they do get, they'll get a thermal burn on the top of the head, and it kind of turns it kind of a reddish color, and it can start some disease up there on top of it, and, you know, get it started on breaking down.
Okay.
It warms back up again.
And what temperature do you usually see that happening again? Tell me that temperature again, Johnny.
It's usually on those mornings where the air gets really still and the temperature plunges really fast and you get a heavy frost, and
yeah,
it can be anywhere around 27, 26 degrees, and anything below that, of course.
Yeah, okay, good. And that's good. So... And that would be very easy to fix, wouldn't it? Just a little bit of a... What do you use?
I think you could throw a blanket over the top of them, and that would probably keep it from doing it. But, you know, I don't really do a whole lot to mine it ever. I just plan on the things making it through, and if they don't make it through, that's tough.
Right. Well, and if you begin to see a little damage on some plants, you can go ahead and begin eating those. It's usually that kind of damage takes a little while to develop as the temperatures warm up, and then you begin to get these little bacterial infections that invade because there's a little bit of frost damage. So that makes perfect sense. And Johnny, this is great. Johnny, of course, I always rely on Johnny for information about cabbages because he's been doing it a long time, does it really well, much better than I do, I always admit. And so that's good to know, Johnny. Thank you.
Okay. See you later.
Hey, good to hear from you. So listen, folks, let's think about this carefully when we're out trying to cover plants. You know, I've been asked about bananas at this point too, and let me add, you know, these are the kinds of temperatures that even if you don't cover your banana, it's probably going to make it through just fine, and you'll be able to get fruit again pretty early next year. I would say if you've got bananas and it gets down to 26 degrees, it might be good to cover them. We can talk a little bit more next week about how to cover bananas to get them through. What's the best way to do that? There's a whole nother strategy there because bananas are big, and it takes a little bit of effort to figure out how to cover them. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week, so be sure to call in. Hey, folks, it's been good. It's been a good show. Been good to hear from you. Good to talk to you. I hope we helped a little bit with some of your questions about this cold weather coming in. We'll watch it. Remember, I think this week we're going to be okay. Watch your nasturtiums. Next weekend, we may have a little bit more to talk about. Could be a little bit colder. Might have to cover a few more things. But get those tomatoes started if you want to start them from seeds. I'm going to try a whole other suite of tomatoes this year. We'll be back next week to talk about it.